now at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you, Scott, and hello to you. How are your plants doing? If you'd like to talk about it, you can just simply give us a call, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. And leading off every Saturday morning is the Good Gardening Stroll. Then after that, we can discuss what's impacting your landscape. Or maybe it's your tropical world, your houseplants. Maybe some of those houseplants are out on your deck or on your patio or front porch or whatever it happens to be. But we can talk about it. Is there insects that you need to be suspicious of or certain spots or should you be transplanting anything? Should you be pruning anything? Well, I'll share my knowledge, and hopefully it'll help you make a good decision. But the action you decide to do is going to be up to you. And remember, this is your show, and I appreciate you hearing about your plant world right here. Another very important player is Drew. Drew is here. He's producing. He pushes all the buttons, answers the phone. All he needs is your first name. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since its beginning, which was 1994. And besides our Saturday morning get-together, I can come out to your plant world and do an on-site consultation, which I call a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number. Today, after the show, I'm headed to Edwardsville. Well, let's get strolling. This walk is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Well, I never really know ahead of time where I'm going to head, and so I decided, let's go up this way, let's do this. And I ended up at Compton and Charlton, and that is the South City Academy Compton campus. And the neighboring plants included in a separate building used daylilies, maiden grasses. And they were singing along with magnolia trees and some blue spruce trees. The parking lot had reserved spots for the teacher of the month and the school nurses. The building was erected in 1962. Along the foundation of the Compton community is the Compton Community Garden. There was a couple rabbits running, so the rabbits really liked the area a lot. Birds were singing. There was tomatoes that were nice and colorful. Somebody better get there and harvest them soon. Sunflowers were in bloom. Squash was sprawling all over the place. There was actually a three-story-high holly tree there. And it was really kind of neat. Along the building foundation, too, you could see boxwood. You could see red barberry, liriope, and evergreen euonymus. And they had shown, like a lot of callers or a lot of listeners have experienced this past winter, some of the broadleaf evergreen euonymus had some damage to them. There was a pair of pots there. One pot had marigolds. The other one had begonias. And there was lawn sprinkled with a mixture of various things, including Dutch white clover. But it was routinely mowed, so it didn't look bad at all. Some of the young street trees were joining some of the other trees. One of them was a hackberry tree, and that was planted by the city forestry department. There was a tag that was there declaring that, what type of tree it was and who did the installation. So the flag was blowing. It was really kind of a nice morning. And I think it felt a little bit humid, but not too bad. I know it had rained earlier. I don't know exactly when it was, but when I was out, I didn't feel any rain whatsoever. So, again, if you have any questions or concerns about your plant world, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's get a call in before we take a break. Let's go over to Ann's yard. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Mike. Hi. I know that you mentioned once before the best time to plant grass seed is in the fall.
Yes.
Ideally, when in the fall, number one. And number two, would it be beneficial to mix that dirt with compost before I plant the seed. It's an area where I had to have a large oak tree taken out.
It probably would help, but you're still, if you've had a large oak tree taken out, you're probably not going to have very much success growing grass in that spot for quite a while. Because even if they've, all the shavings and everything from the trunk removal and everything else, they're still going to be wood.
They completely remove the trunk, and it's, you don't see anything except dirt.
It doesn't matter, but there's still a lot of wood underneath the ground there, root systems and everything else. And all that is going to, as it starts to implode and rot off and rot and die, it's going to bind up nutrients and everything else, so it's going to make it difficult to grow grass. You can certainly try it and give it a shot and see what you think, but you'll probably have to continue to put grass seed in the fall. And it doesn't really matter when you do it in the fall. Sometime, let's say, after late August all the way up until, I probably wouldn't do it too much past Halloween. So you got a couple months, and mixing in, compost with the soil would certainly help. But it's, again, not going to guarantee that you're going to have much success with the grass seed, especially the first time you put it down.
Well, then should I try, if it doesn't work this time, should I try again in the spring or just wait again until next fall?
I would, it's up to you. I wouldn't have any problem, thinking that maybe putting seed down in the spring and fall both until you can finally get it thick enough. But depending upon the size of the tree and everything, even though it was cleared out and everything was, in theory removed, there's going to be several years before you're going to have a halfway decent lawn.
Thank you for your help. I won't be too discouraged then when it doesn't work immediately.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Sure, my pleasure. Mike Miller, KMWash Garden Hotline. We have phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, with the rain forecast, remember that, we love to really kind of have fun out in the rain. And the savvy gardener knows that if it starts raining and there is some lightning, drop the metal tools and hide indoors. How can you tell when a thunderstorm is coming? Well, be sensitive to your own reactions. The hair actually will stand up on your neck and on your arms. Lightning prepares to strike if lightning prepares to strike nearby. And if this happens, head to the nearest shelter. I was out the other day, and we were having some lightning strikes, and Tracy yelled out the window, "Get into the garage." So I went into the garage, and we didn't have any lightning strikes real close, but definitely when you're out there, don't hide under a single, lone tree, because that can cause some real problems as well. But always, just stay inside if lightning starts striking. So just kind of keep that in mind, because there is nearly 1,000 people get struck by lightning every year in the United States, and more than 100 of those die from the injuries from the lightning. So just be real cautious of that whole thing. And as you know, one of my favorite quotes is by Mark Twain: thunder is good, thunder is impressive, but it's lightning that does the work. So let's head over to Doug's yard. Hi, Doug. How are you?
I'm doing well. I've talked to you before almost every other week. I have a mulberry tree in my yard, and I have a mulberry sapling. The sapling's about 4 foot tall, and I'm wanting to grow more into a tree than a bush. Is it okay to cut the suckers off on the bottom at this time of the year, and or should I wait till the fall?
Now you're saying,
I want to train this to be more of a tree than a bush.
Yeah, I would say leave it as it is right now, because you want to keep as much foliage as you possibly can, just help with the overall health of the root system and just the above ground growth in general. And then in the fall, make sure you water it really well before you dig it up and transplant it to a new location.
Oh, I don't plan on transplanting this thing. It's in a part of my yard where it can grow free and be its thing. So I want it to just grow up as a tree where it is.
Okay, so in other words, you've got it's surprising that one that small would have some, sucker growth.
Yeah, it's got little stems coming up all over near the base.
Okay.
And I want to get them out of there.
Yeah, so go ahead, and if you want to, you could prune them now, but I'd just probably wait until the weather cools down, just in case there might be, some kind of fungus-related problem with our humidity and everything else that's going on.
I know you don't like the trees, but the fruits off them, the birds and the deer and my dog all love them. Thank you very much.
It is great. I mean, they're nice trees. And let's see, where should we go now? Let's go over to James' yard. Hi, James. Hello, James, are you there?
This is Gene.
Yes. Oh, Gene?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Two questions. How do I get rid of goosegrass and sedges?
Nut sedge, basically you got to get a special herbicide that is a sedge killer, because regular herbicides will not kill the nut sedge. So go to your favorite garden center and get that. And if the goosegrass is growing in your regular lawn, there's really not too much you can do as far as killing it off, because it will, and anything that you spray on it would be a grass killer, and that grass killer would basically kill your lawn. But what you can do is go after it as with a pre-emergent, and you want to put that pre-emergent down in the springtime, about the same time the yellow forsythia is in bloom.
Yeah, well, I did that. Goosegrass is tough.
Yeah, but I mean, it does come back. It is an annual grass, so it does come back each year.
Yeah.
So from seed.
Second question. Are your gardener friends seeing fewer hummingbirds this year?
I haven't seen them. I've seen two hummingbirds is all I've seen. And I've seen them, in my, just whizzing by my yard. And I was at one house a couple weeks ago, and I saw a couple hummingbirds going to one of their feeders. But they don't seem to be quite as prominent this year, at least at this particular time.
I just wonder, I'd like to know what's going on. Bless their hearts.
Well, they got a long way to travel, so I don't know, if it's weather-wise, since the weather is, it seems like the weather or the climate of the entire Earth is changing, and that may change their courses of what they're going to go and how they're going to go and everything else. So that might have an impact.
That's very sad.
Yes.
Thank you, Mike, for your show, and thanks for all the help that you give us all the time.
Well, my pleasure. Again, for the goosegrass, along the warm season annual weeds that the pre-emergent will control by putting the pre-emergent down in the springtime are spurges, ragweed, purslane, knotweed, mallow, lamb's quarter, black medic, carpet weed, crabgrass, barnyard grass, goosegrass, foxtail, and violets. All those things come back every year from seed that is dropped during the growing season. So that's the best way to get it under control.
I believe I have one of every one of them in my yard.
So you have a spectacular yard.
Spectacular. Thank you very much, Mike.
Sure, my pleasure. Yeah, you have to kind of take the philosophy that my father did. If it's green, it's good. Because we, growing up in Ellisville, we had all kinds of maple trees and fruit trees and stuff in our yard. And it was pretty much impossible. But there were some people in the neighborhood. These were all new homes built in the mid-50s that went after and tried to get the, decent lawn and everything growing. We had probably more trees than most of the houses, but all of them had some, and they were, it was like a lane that went up to a farmhouse at the top of a hill. And consequently, it was like tree-lined lane, And this lane, the trees were all silver maples. So lots of surface roots and all kinds of different stuff. Lots of junk got into the gutters and everything else. Let's head over to Craig's yard. Hi, Craig.
Hey, how are you doing, Mike?
Very good.
Well, thank you very much, first of all, for your service, and thanks to KMOX for having you do that and allowing you to be on our show. My question is involved with rhubarb. And we got some small rhubarb plants at a local garden center and planted them in pots. And what's happening is the leaves or the stalks are getting about 8 inches tall. The leaves are broadening out. And then the leaves are starting to get yellow around the edges. And they end up dying and the stalks wither. There are new leaves that keep coming. And this is just sort of a cycle. They're outside. They get full sun. We keep them watered. Got any ideas what's going on with this?
How large is a pot?
The pot's about a foot in diameter and 18 inches deep.
Yeah, that's it should be adequate for the first season's growth. But for the most part, I think what you're experiencing is just trying to grow something like rhubarb in containers. Even though you're keeping it watered and everything else, the heat of the sun, because you said they're in full sun, just really is warming up the soil of a huge amount, and that's probably what is impacting your rhubarb more so than anything else.
Okay, so plant them in bigger pots?
Bigger pots.
Plant them in the ground, right?
So you don't have a place that you can put them in the ground?
Well, we do, but the deer eat them. and they eat it down to the nub.
Oh.
I mean, they and when I was at survival school in the Air Force, they said if you watch a deer and they eat something, you can eat it. But I always heard that rhubarb leaves were poisonous, and then I saw the deer eating the rhubarb, and now I'm confused. But that's another issue.
Yeah. So yeah, if you've got a problem with the deer, then just maybe try. Yeah. Try to get a larger pot. And what you might do is get a larger pot and set the pot that you're actually going to use the potting mix to grow the rhubarb in down into a pot that has no potting mix or soil or anything, you know, on it whatsoever. So that's probably what I would recommend doing.
Okay, well, thanks for your time and mostly for your expertise. Appreciate it.
Sure, my pleasure. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We have phone lines open, and we'll be back after these messages.
Hey, this is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Just realize, folks, that when we try to do things for our plant material, being fertilizing and all that other kind of stuff, that certain plants take a different type of fertilizer or need a different type of pH, like clematis vines. Clematis vines prefer, and lilacs as well, an alkaline soil, where things like azaleas and dogwoods, they prefer an acidic soil. So that doing the combination of those two things too close together can make some real, let's say, bad circumstances for the plant material because one impact on the other is not going to be all that good. So just keep things in mind when you're planning or when your landscape contractor is planning and you tell them, well, we want to have some clematis and we want to have some azaleas in close proximity. He should be saying to you, well, that won't work. It's going to be too detrimental to each one of them. Right now, let's head over to Kurt's yard. Hi, Kurt.
Good morning, Mike. Hi.
I've
got a couple of questions on a couple of trees of mine. We have a large linden tree in the front yard. It's probably got a spread of about 30, 40 feet. It's getting larger every year. And every year in about May or June, it starts dropping these bi-leaflet leaves. They kind of look like a little helicopter that come down. They have spread across our lawn, and it looks like a snowstorm. We have been blowing them off, raking them off. They keep coming for the last couple of months. I'm wondering, I had asked my tree trimmer about cutting the spread of this tree, which is about 25 or 30 feet wide, cutting off the end branches to kind of narrow the tree down. He said, oh, no, you don't want to do that. He said, linden wood is a very hard wood. They made golf clubs out of this years ago, and he said, you don't want to do anything to trim the tree back. Can we trim off 3 or 4 feet of the largest extending branches around the circumference of the tree to make it a less wide, more narrower, and have less of these leaflets? I don't know what they are, but I'm just wondering if it would be good to prune that down or cut the circumference down about 3 or 4 feet.
Well, that's not going to impact what's falling. What's falling off these linden trees at the time you're describing, and by your description, is actually the flowers of the linden tree. So that's it's really not a leaf, even though it does look like a leaflet. It has a small, smaller leaflet attached to it. That is actually for the flower earlier on. And the linden trees do have fragrance. So cutting it back and making it more narrow is not really going to have an impact as far as the amount of flowers. Except
it would be just less flowers. I mean, it would just be less branches, less leaves, less yard debris.
That's true. And so you could do it. I mean, there's no reason not to prune it.
It won't kill the tree.
No, it won't kill the tree.
Okay.
So, and I would get in contact with a different tree service, because this gentleman's saying that you don't want to cut a linden tree because they used to make golf clubs out of them. Who cares? This is your yard, and it's causing an impact on a lot of your landscape, and so consequently, you just make sure that the tree service, when they come in, if they're cutting off longer branches, they cut them off in the sections with the final cut at the basically the trunk or the next largest branch that it's attached to, with a bottom cut and then a cut from the top down, so there so there's no bark tear or anything like that.
Would it hurt to top the tree?
It won't necessarily hurt. Pruning in general doesn't really hurt the trees, but it's, again, as I always say, when you reduce the amount of leaves on a tree, then consequently the tree can suffer as a result of that, because nutrients and moisture come up from the root system, they go to the leaf, and then the leaf uses sunlight to make food, which keeps the tree healthy. And that's what, if you reduce the amount of leaf count too much, then the overall health of the tree can be, head downhill.
So it's just better just to leave it untopped, but just maybe trim periphery a little bit around the edges.
Right.
Okay, then I have another tree in the backyard over our deck, and it has been dropping tiny little pea-like seeds or something. They're little green seeds. They're a little smaller than a green pea, but they are all over our deck. Do you know what tree that produces that? It's somebody said we had a cottonwood tree in the backyard.
Well, a cottonwood tree is going to actually. I mean, it could be the cottonwood, but usually the cottonwood is going to draw. Some of this, let's say the seeds of the cottonwood tree looks like little pieces of cotton, tiny pieces that blow.
We haven't seen that.
Okay, so then I would say this is probably not a cottonwood. I would just take a couple leaves off of it and take it to your favorite garden center and let them identify it for you, because it's not really ringing a bell with me right now.
Okay, and take maybe a couple of those little seeds or pea-sized droppings also.
You can take that, but usually it's pretty easy to identify a tree from the foliage, because they're pretty unique.
Okay. All right. That's fine. I appreciate it. Thank you very much for your service.
Sure. My pleasure.
All right.
And folks, we got phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Summer bulbs, they should be absolutely getting spectacular by this time of year. I've got some cannas. I used to have a lot more, but I cut down the number just because I just didn't want to have so many pots. But some of them are really getting striking, and same with my elephant ears. And I have some castor beans that originally the seeds I stole from the Busch Stadium that had been no longer there, that was before the Bush, current Bush Stadium was built. But they, at that time, when I got the seeds from outside Bush Stadium, they planted castor beans around the outside of the stadium in the sidewalk areas. And so I knew what the seeds looked like, so I just went up and got some seeds. So that was, you know, multiple years ago that I've been growing, you know, castor beans as from those original seeds. Now, they've kind of lost some of the hybridization because the original ones were pretty bright red leaves, and the ones that now, they're just green leaves. But over time, they just kind of lost that redness due to the genetic factors. Let's go now over to Linda's yard. Hi, Linda.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. I have phlox in my front yard, quite a bit of it, and some of the areas are turning brown, like the little brown covering, but it's still green on the end. And I've watered it and everything, and it seems like it's dying in certain areas.
So you're talking about the creeping phlox, or you're talking about the one that grows vertical?
Creeping. No, vertical.
So it gets tall, like 2 or 3 feet?
No, I'm sorry, horizontal.
Okay, so it grows horizontal. It could be, I mean, phlox can do very well, but also it can, you know, if there's too much rain or, you know, the location, even though it's been there for a long time, if that spot, right, because of the weather that we've had this year, is extra wet, that could be causing some of the detrimental or downturn of the growth. So there's really not too much you can do about it, to be honest.
Okay, because it's beautiful in the, fall and that.
Well, I thought, don't they flower in the spring?
Spring, but it lasts a long, long time.
Right, yeah, it is. I mean, they do. There's a couple houses close to us that have some phlox, and they have them growing over behind a stone wall, so it's really an elevated spot. So theirs looks pretty good, and consistently good. But what also, as some of the, just like with lots of different types of ground cover, the ivies and things like that, as they age, some of the older, let's say, stems just kind of get exhausted. So you may have to end up getting some new phlox in the next spring, and just sort of putting it in some of the spots that are getting a little bit, aesthetically less than what you want.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go over to Glenn's yard. Hi, Glenn.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
My question is regarding using Roundup on heavy weeds, like, let's say, a Joe Pye weed that's already 4 or 5 foot tall, and you cut it down. I thought I heard you say in the past, go ahead and just brush some Roundup on that, the cut stem. But I was under the impression Roundup was only effective through leaves and photosynthesis. So straighten me out, please.
Okay. The one I'm saying to use as far as cutting it off is like doing it with honeysuckle. So the woody type honeysuckle, you're getting a specific type Roundup for killing woody plants. So the normal type Roundup is definitely, you got to have the foliage there. You got to spray it on the foliage and kill it that way. But the other type, which kills woody plant material, that's the one I'm saying cut it off and then paint it onto the, at the cut. So two different types of Roundup and two different types of plants, one herbaceous and the other one woody.
Okay, that clarifies that. What do you think on a Joe Pye weed, for example, which we have too many of, if you cut off the top 80% of it and left a few leaves on it, you could just apply the Roundup to 4 or 5 leaves and it would be effective?
Yeah, it probably should. And, I mean, this is something that comes, it's, doesn't necessarily come back as a perennial. It comes back from seed. I've got a lot of that growing in, various couple of different beds because I'm just watching it grow. I mean, it's amazing how many, how much flowering and then how much fruit that it actually produces. So I've just been kind of watching it. But, you could try it that way.
Okay. Mike, thanks for your program.
Sure.
Always listen.
My pleasure. And what you might do is if you only have a few leaves left, what you could do is rather than spray it, because the spray may impact some other plants that are close by. So in other words, using the normal Roundup is just paint it onto the leaves that you have left. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
The gentleman that was talking three or four callers ago that had rhubarb that they had to grow, or he was growing in pots because he couldn't grow it in the ground because of the deer problems. Here's some of the perennials and ground covers that deer do not damage unless they are just absolutely desperate. Some of the ground covers, again, perennials, sedums, vinca minor, creeping phlox, butterfly or milkweed, columbine, coreopsis, primrose, thistles, penstemon, purple coneflowers, most of the ferns, Russian sage, a lot of the herbs they don't bother. And so just kind of keep that in mind if you want to grow some things that are herbaceous type or ground cover type and you do have a deer problem. Another one is hellebores. So that is actually an evergreen that does well in the shade. Let's head over to Jackie's yard now. Hi, Jackie.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have a problem. The Japanese beetles are destroying my rose bushes. Is there a spray or something I could put on there to get those things away?
Yeah, just you're going to have to basically spray it on them directly to be the most effective. So just go to your favorite garden center and tell them you got a Japanese beetle problem and see what kind of product that they have. Also, in the future, what you might do is get a systemic type insecticide that actually is absorbed into the rose bush, and then consequently, as anything feeds on it, regardless of what type of insect, it'll kill them that way.
Oh, I used to spray malathion on my trees to keep them away, but I don't even see malathion anymore.
Well, just, again, head to your favorite garden center and tell them you got the Japanese beetle problem and see what they have.
Okay. I thank you.
All right. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, Japanese beetles, I'm not seeing them, you know, all that much this year, so it's kind of surprising. And if you don't know if you have Japanese beetles, they're a relatively small beetle, but they look very metallic. And the best thing to do is if you start to see a lot of holes in your rose bushes or some other plants, really anything, the best time to go out and see if, you know, what the insect actually is that's causing the problem is earlier in the morning, because that's when the most of the activity is going to occur. And also on the underside of the leaf or on the underside of the stem. So in other words, they feed and then they go, you know, cause other problems. What I'm starting to see more so than anything as I'm walking around is leaf miner. And leaf miner does like on the actually foliage of the plant, it looks like a little scribble where they actually are tunneling. They're in the leaf, you know, in the leaf layers. So that's another one that you're going to have to go after with a systemic type circumstance. Because if you don't, then it's not going to really, you know, it's not going to be effective. So just kind of keep that in mind. The weed problems, yes, they are kind of, I mean, it's unbelievable. I've tried to keep up with my weeds. I don't use herbicides except I do use some Roundup for cracks in the sidewalk and things like that, or the different sections in the sidewalk. But for the most part in my yard, I don't. So I've been hand digging and boy, there is, I don't know what particular weed this one is that I have. I should know, but it's just, this year it just has exploded. So I've been working on it, and it's a type of clover, and the runners are absolutely unbelievable. As I start to dig it, and I start to pull it up, and then it runs and runs and runs to the next, let's say, clump of foliage with the little yellow flowers. And then, it's driving me, I don't want to say crazy, but, you know, and I should know what to do. But, again, I'm just playing around with it because certain things, I hadn't had this problem at all in the past. And this year it just has exploded. So it's just been really kind of amazing. Let's head over to Ann's yard. Ann, can you do it kind of quick?
Oh, yeah. For the lady that has the bug infestation, Milky Spore.
Okay.
I used to work at one of those favorite garden centers, and I use that. I have not had a Japanese beetle since then.
Oh, really?
All
right.
You really have to follow the instructions on the bag.
Right. And that's with anything that you're going to apply, you know, reading a label is extremely important. If you don't do that, then you may be just wasting your time and money, mental money and real money both.
It's amazing. I have maybe one or two Japanese beetles now that I ever see.
All right.
It's really a great product.
Great. Well, thanks.
Yes. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. And Gloria, can you do it quickly?
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I want to ask you a couple questions. The first question is I grew some watermelons, and they like flat on the ground. Can I get hay to lift them up?
Why do you want to lift them?
Because they land flat on the ground, and some of the stuff I see on YouTube is showing that they do where they're standing up or something. I don't know.
Well, okay. I don't know about that, but I would say just leave them alone. I mean, the bottom of them are going to be discolored, but I would say just leave them alone.
Okay, one more question. I'm going to let you go. I got lilies and the ones that smell good, too. Can you cut those where they'll come back next year?
Yeah. If there's the classic type lily with the long stem, then you could, they're perennial, so they're going to come back. It should be no problem whatsoever.
So do I cut them low or do when I bring them in for the house?
Well, cut them, you know, enough so you can get them into a vase, but don't cut them down too low because you want to leave as many leaves as you possibly can so they can build up the bulb for the, you know, the following year.
Yeah, the ones that smell good, I use about in the end of the year when they don't want them no more, and I put them in my yard, and I got a whole yard full of them.
All right.
But the other ones, you know, the plain ones, I usually store those in the house or something, and I got about 40 of them now. So.
Well, that sounds great. So you do a good job. Thanks, Gloria. And, folks, it's about 1 hour over, but we do have another hour of the Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you, Scott, and Scott rules. I couldn't even get my call screener up because Scott had to log in and then Drew had to take care of it. And I mean, I'm just too dumb. I can't do any of this stuff myself. But anyway, this is the KMOX Garden Hotline second hour, which is a tip of the trowel. Special on-air recognition for individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me this past week. And it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. But right now, we've got phone lines open. If you have any ideas, questions, concerns, or comments related to the plant world, either inside or out, just give us a call, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Then you can talk about it or I can talk about it. And thanks for inviting me onto your show where discussions range from making a selection for a specific location in your yard plant-wise, how to care for that plant once it's, you know, there. Can you do any pruning this time of year? Tracy wasn't too happy. We have a mugel pine by our back steps, and which leads out to the sidewalk. And it was just growing over the sidewalk too much. So this past week, I did some pruning on the mugel pine. And so even though sometimes I say you shouldn't be doing it this time of year, I still like to do things that I say don't do so I can see what's going to happen as a result of that. So I'm always, you know, kind of going contrary to what I think is the best way or what I've learned over the years is the best thoughts, and just to see, because you never know what's going to happen, especially with the climatic changes that we're going through. But again, please remember, as I share my thoughts, my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take to success, but strictly offered for you to consider. Another very important player, as I said before, is Drew. He's producing. He pushes all the buttons, and he answers the phone. And when you call in, he just needs your first name, and then he'll get you up on the call screener. And I'm Mike Miller, by the way. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. And besides a Saturday morning get-together, I can come out to your plant world for an on-site consultation, which is a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, and on the homepage, there's my email address and phone number. So today's tip of the trowel, as I said before, is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Tip of the trowel goes out to everybody that had some damage due to some of those really strong winds we've had in the last week. Drew was saying his neighbor had a tree blow over, and the one lady in the Grove neighborhood actually had a walnut tree blow over, and she actually died as a result of it. She was in her car. So, I mean, there was some really extremely strong winds, and that was really kind of unbelievable. I was outside just kind of watching them, and, you know, when the lightning started striking, that's when Tracy yelled out to me, get inside the garage. So I did that because I just wanted to stay out. I just didn't really want to come into the house, although they say you should be going into the house. But everybody that had some damage, and it was, you know, unfortunate, some of the trees that went down. I mean, trees are really strategically important from an aesthetic standpoint. And when a tree gets blown over or knocked down, it can cause some real heartache just kind of in general. So everybody that had some damage as a result of the storms that we've had recently, a tip of the trowel goes out to you as you try to get your plant world back together again, because a lot of things were growing underneath the trees, whether it be just simple ground covers like English ivy or Baltic ivy or hostas or ferns or who knows what else, you know, Japanese painted ferns, some of the coral bells and things like that. So just lots of different stuff going on in the outdoors. And as things are changing, I'm watching the wind blow the flag here on the north side of the Soldiers Memorial. It's not blowing too much, but still blowing a little bit. But it looks like I can't really, the way the flag's blowing, the way the clouds are moving, looks like they're two separate directions. So, wonder what's going on. Anyway, let's go over to Mary's yard before we take a break. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Hi.
I have two questions. First of all, last fall, I bought like 100 snow crocus, and I only got like 50 of them planted. Could this coming fall, could I plant those?
Just take a look at them and feel them to see if they're still firm, then you should be okay. If they're not firm, if they're kind of hollow feeling, then I probably wouldn't bother.
Okay. And then this spring, I got some gladiolus bulbs and some others, and I didn't get all of those planted. Is it too late to plant those now, or should I wait till next spring?
Oh, no, you shouldn't wait. You should get them into the ground as soon as possible. And with the gladiolus, you get the foliage and one set of flowers, and then that's it.
Okay. I mean, for the season, I'll get one.
Right, exactly. Okay. You should have, you know, there should be adequate time for the foliage to come up and then for it to go into flower. But you're kind of pushing it as far as timing-wise goes.
Okay. All right. That's all I wanted to know. Thank you very much.
Sure. My pleasure. And 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This, folks, phone line's open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head over to Susie's yard. Hi, Susie.
Hi. Are you today?
Good.
I have three different things. First of all, I call it lemongrass, and it's about 3 feet in diameter, and it's in the middle of the yard, and it's like long blades of grass, and they're very light green. I don't know if that's lemongrass or if there is such a thing, but that's... So, what would that be?
It's probably... Well, you know, it's a little tough from your description to actually tell what it, you know, what it actually is. So,
it's just long blade grass in the middle of the yard in a circle, and it is taller than my regular fescue grass.
Right. So, is it when you feel it right when it comes up out of the ground? Does it feel triangular at that spot?
Triangular, yeah, sort of.
Yeah, so what you got to do is take a sample to make sure that you're getting the right thing. Just pull up some of it and take it to your favorite garden center and let them take a look at it, and they'll let you know what it is.
Okay.
And then they'll give you the herbicide to take care of it.
And then my dogwood tree, at the base of the trunk, the dirt... there's knobs, like small knobs coming up around at the ground level. And I don't know if I should put more dirt on there or what.
No, just leave it alone.
And I have an awful lot of dead twigs in my dogwood tree, but it's about 30 years old.
Yeah, so that's just an aging thing that you don't need to really worry about.
Okay, then my roses. I have good growth at the top, but from the base up to the good growth is the leaves look kind of like lacy. Something's eating it, and I was told that I could mix Dawn with water and put it on there, and I wanted to know if you thought about that and how much ratio should I use?
Probably, you know, you could do that, or I would just go to your favorite garden center and get, you know, like some kind of organic type fertilizer, organic type insecticide, because that's
well,
probably
I have
what the
problem seven.
Is.
Would that be good or not?
What was that? I missed that.
Seven.
Seven. Could be strong enough, but it may not be. So just
because I had put that on there previously,
right? And basically, with seven, you've got to actually spray it directly onto the insect.
Uh huh. Okay. Thank you so very much, and thank you for sending us this rain.
My pleasure.
Okay. Have a great day.
Yep. You do the very same thing. Now let's head over to Anthony's. Hi, Anthony.
Good afternoon. Good morning, Mike. I got a couple of questions. For the last couple of years, I've been putting compost in my garden and tilling it in.
Uh-huh.
And this year, my tomato plants just didn't grow. And even I put zucchini in, and it does the same thing. It won't grow. Is that too rich of a soil for the tomatoes? And I took the tomatoes up and put them in a bucket, and seems like they're starting to recover.
It shouldn't be too rich. I mean, having it, you know, just adding compost on a, you know, an yearly basis should not have that kind of detrimental impact.
Okay. Now my next question, I raised fig trees. And I got online, and it says I could regrow fig trees by cutting a stem off of the fig tree and putting it in the ground. When would be the best time to do that? In the spring? Could I do that now? Or it seems like they don't grow. They die. Would you seal the end of the stems before with some type of a... what I want to call it, just to seal it that it wouldn't kill the plant or
no,
help it grow?
Sealers just really don't do anything, so I wouldn't bother with that. So you're talking about the hardy fig that grows outside?
Yeah. I have a black fig and a white fig.
Right. So I would say, you know, I don't know why yours are dying, because there's a house close to me that, you know, has probably three different fig trees in their backyard, and they seem to come back, you know, from the same circumstance, location every year.
Right. They're not dying. I have very hardy fig trees.
Okay.
What I'm trying to do is reproduce one off of the
branch. What you're trying. Yeah, I mean, you've got to go to your favorite garden center and get a rooting hormone, and you got to get some.
I do have that.
Pardon me?
I have a rooting hormone.
Okay.
I haven't tried putting it on there.
Okay, so basically you take the cutting, you get some, you're going to be growing it in a pot early, you know, for the first couple years. Get some potting mix for starting plants,
okay.
And then take the cutting, dip it into the rooting hormone, then put it into the potting mix for starting plants, and then grow it in the pot for a couple of years.
Okay.
And for the winter time, basically what you need to do is dig a hole in some garden space and just drop the pot down into the hole.
Oh, during the winter, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. So
you can pull it out, or you can just leave it in that, you know, in the hole. You don't want to bury it. You want to leave about the top 2 inches of the pot above the surrounding ground and just leave it there for a couple years. You don't need to pull it out and then put it back and pull it out and put it back.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Sure, my pleasure.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
Yep, and let's go to Lenny's. Hi, Lenny.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I got, I don't know if it's centipede or Bermuda grass growing into some of my flower beds. Can I just, if I use like Roundup, something systemic, if I spray like the edges outside of my beds, will it travel and kill the I don't know, whatever you want to call them, you know, because they're spidering all over the place. They're growing in amongst stuff I don't want to spray. Will it, if I just hit part of that plant, will that chemical travel and kill the stuff that's getting in my bed?
Yeah, it should be able to be translocated.
Okay, because, you know, it's getting up in stuff that I know you can paint it on, but it's just getting in places where I don't want it to get in, and I didn't know if I just kill it on the good side, if it'll travel. So
yeah,
it sounds like
so,
it will.
I mean, give all it right. a try. It may not, you know, may not translocate it enough to kill it all the way up.
Okay, that's all I had. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Bye.
See, and the lady that had the lemongrass, probably... that she thought was lemongrass, probably that's nutsedge. And so you need to go to your favorite garden center. Take a sample again, because I'm not positively sure that it was nutsedge. But you're going to use nutsedge killer if it is nutsedge, because that will kill only the nutsedge and won't kill other plant material, your lawn or whatever it happens to be right around there. So again, the lady with the, which she thought was a lemongrass type thing, was probably nutsedge. So let's see. Let's go to, hi, Claire. How are you today?
Hello, Mike. I have a question about peonies. When is the best time to cut them back after they bloomed?
You should leave them, you know, as long as you possibly can. But once they start getting their powdery mildew over all the leaves, then you could probably cut them back at that time.
Okay, they're really real full and green right now, so I guess I should leave them.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'll write this down because I think I have to call you every year, so thank you. Bye-bye.
See you. And now let's go to Ron's yard. Hi, Ron. Ron, are you there?
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, I'm going to ask you, what causes tomato rot and how do you prevent it?
Basically, tomato rot, blossom end rot, the bottom of the tomatoes, if that's what you're talking about, is due to the lack of calcium. So that means that you have to use tomato fertilizer because it will have the calcium in it. So if you don't have that's basically what it is. It's a lack of a specific type of nutrient. And again, it's the calcium, and that's what causes the basically blossom end rot, even though it's not the blossom, it's actually a fruit. Is that Ron again?
Yep.
Oh, go ahead, Ron. Ron, are you there? Ron, go ahead.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead. So, again, make sure you use fertilizer for tomato plants because it's going to have the calcium, and that will prevent
That was my question about the blossom.
Right. So you need to get fertilizer specifically for tomatoes. Okay, we're going to go to break. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Getting your soil tested is extremely important, especially if you're really into plant material, because the circumstance for lawn is going to be the circumstance as far as growing vegetables different, as far as growing perennials different. So they're all different. So get your soil tested. That way you can find out what, let's say, there is in your soil, and then you can make the additions or maybe not adding something. A lot of times people through the years have added fertilizers that have had nutrients that were detrimental to the plant material. So in other words, just because it's a fertilizer doesn't necessarily mean it's going to do good. So just keep that in mind, and that's the whole thing about it. And also just to find out what their soil pH is, that's the acidity versus the alkalinity. And acidity just means like vinegar versus salt. That's what the difference is. Some plants like it salty, some plants like it vinegary. And that's going to make a huge difference on your success. Let's head over to Linda's. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I just had a thought on the people that are calling about not enough calcium for their tomato plants.
Right.
My grandma used to always save her eggshells. And then in the springtime when they were ready to plant the tomatoes, she would put a crushed layer of eggshells there before they put the plant in.
Ah.
And they never had blossom end rot. Of course, it wasn't called that way back then. but I've been doing that for a couple of years, and I haven't been bothered with it either.
All right. Well, that sounds great. Well, thanks for the insight.
And it's basically free. It's recycling.
Yes, very much so.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
All right, thank you. And now let's go from Linda's to Dawn's. Hi, Dawn.
Hey, how are you today?
Good, very good.
Good. I had a volunteer tomato plant last year that the volunteer tomatoes about the size of a golf ball, and they were so phenomenal. This year, I got another volunteer plant, and these are more like grape tomatoes. I have no idea what the deal is, but what I was wondering in this year, it's in a really bad spot. I'm keeping it because it's grown. But I was wondering, when I first see it, at what point can I move it?
Basically, as soon as you see it, you should move it then. And just make sure you water it before you're going to move it. Now, how are you having these volunteers?
I have no idea. I guess it's birds. I wish I knew, because we have a garden on 4 acres, and the garden is on the far end, opposite end of where we're getting the volunteer tomatoes from.
Oh, that's kind of incredible, because, you know, tomatoes usually, you know, they don't produce seeds that are actually going to be able to survive in wintertime. So you got some tough tomatoes.
Yeah, right. Well, unfortunately, the really good ones did not come back this year. So I'm hoping that I've just got a couple red ones just coming right now. So we'll see if these are as good, but they're smaller. So
taste-wise.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing taste-wise. Right.
All right. Well, great. Well, thanks, Dawn. And now let's go to Rich's yard. Hi, Rich.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
I'm calling about a couple of things. Arborvitaes. It seems like mine are growing a lot this year, but they're growing off to the side to where it's almost growing another arborvitae. Can you cut those off and root those anyway?
No, I would say don't bother trying to do that. So it's just, I mean, you could possibly do it, but success is just going to be, you know, more aggravation than it's going to be a positive thing. You could go ahead and try it, but it's, like I said, getting a successful circumstance with getting it rooted is going to be really minimal.
Yeah, I want to kind of get them to where they're looking more pyramid-shaped.
Right.
Okay.
So
hey, I just wanted to mention, you mentioned about the clover with the yellow flowers. I'm having, just mentioned my wife the other day, we're having it something terrible this year where we haven't had it in the past. So I don't know what it is, but I feel your frustration with that.
With your arborvitae, are they growing towards light? Is that what the circumstance is? They got shade on the backside of them?
No. That's not it. They're just, you know, sometimes they grow pyramid shape, and sometimes they grow kind of short and fat, and that's
right.
What mine are doing this year.
Yeah, some varieties are going to grow with a different shape than other ones, so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mike.
Yep, my pleasure, and now let's go to Maryland's. Hi, Marilyn.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering if you could tell me the difference between Bermuda grass and zoysia. Or if there is a difference.
Oh, there's totally different. The Bermuda grass is going to have more of a bluish green cast to it. And it is, I mean, it does grow by runners just like the zoysia does. But the zoysia grass is going to be darker green. It's going to be a lot thicker, let's say wider blade than the Bermuda. Bermuda looks kind of willowy.
Okay, great. All right, thank you.
Yep, willowy just meaning thin, but the Bermuda is going to be probably a little bit more aggressive than what the zoysia is. And now let's see what's going on in John's yard. Hi, John.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Can you please tell me how to, I've got an Atlas cedar or a cedar Atlas, I'm not sure which how you say it, but right in front of my house, faces south, and it's really starting to look ratty. I had to cut the top off of it a couple of years ago, and I did it at an angle per Hartke. And, you know, but it just looks like a terrible-looking shape. What can I trim that Atlas cedar?
You can, but it's not going to do any good. So they really don't like it here because of our weather and everything else. 6-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Getting your soil tested is extremely important, especially if you're really into plant material, because the circumstance for lawn is going to be the circumstance as far as growing vegetables different, as far as growing perennials different. So they're all different. So get your soil tested. That way you can find out what, let's say, there is in your soil, and then you can make the additions or maybe not adding something. A lot of times people through the years have added fertilizers that have had nutrients that were detrimental to the plant material. So in other words, just because it's a fertilizer doesn't necessarily mean it's going to do good. So just keep that in mind, and that's the whole thing about it. And also just to find out what their soil pH is, that's the acidity versus the alkalinity. And acidity just means like vinegar versus salt. That's what the difference is. Some plants like it salty, some plants like it vinegary. And that's going to make a huge difference on your success. Let's head over to Linda's. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I just had a thought on the people that are calling about not enough calcium for their tomato plants.
Right.
My grandma used to always save her eggshells. And then in the springtime when they were ready to plant the tomatoes, she would put a crushed layer of eggshells there before they put the plant in.
Ah.
And they never had blossom end rot. Of course, it wasn't called that way back then. but But I've been doing that for a couple of years, and I haven't been bothered with it either.
All right. Well, that sounds great. Well, thanks for the insight.
And it's basically free. It's recycling.
Yes, very much so.
Okay, that. Thank you, Mike.
All right, thank you. And now let's go from Linda's to Dawn's. Hi, Dawn.
Hey, how are you today?
Good, very good.
Good. I had a volunteer tomato plant last year that the volunteer tomatoes about the size of a golf ball, and they were so phenomenal. This year, I got another volunteer plant, and these are more like grape tomatoes. I have no idea what the deal is, but what I was wondering in this year, it's in a really bad spot. I'm keeping it because it's grown, but I was wondering when I first see it, at what point can I move it?
It's basically, as soon as you see it, you should move it then. And just make sure you water it before you're going to move it. Now, how are you having these volunteers?
I have no idea. I guess it's birds. I wish I knew because we have a garden on 4 acres, and the garden is on the far end, opposite end of where we're getting the volunteer tomatoes from.
Oh, that's kind of incredible because, you know, tomatoes usually, you know, they don't produce seeds that are actually going to be able to survive the wintertime. So you got some tough tomatoes.
Yeah, right. Well, unfortunately, the really good ones did not come back this year. So I'm hoping that these, I've just got a couple red ones just coming right now. So we'll see if these are as good, but they're smaller. So
taste-wise.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing taste-wise. Right.
All right. Well, great. Well, thanks, Dawn. And now let's go to Rich's yard. Hi, Rich.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
I'm calling about a couple of things. Arborvitaes. It seems like mine are growing a lot this year, but they're growing off to the side to where it's almost growing another arborvitae. Can you cut those off and root those anyway?
No, I would say don't bother trying to do that. So it's just, I mean, you could possibly do it, but success is just going to be, you know, more aggravation than it's going to be a positive thing. You could go ahead and try it, but it's, like I said, getting a successful circumstance with getting it rooted is going to be really minimal.
Yeah, I want to kind of get them to where they're looking more pyramid-shaped.
Right.
Okay.
So
hey, I just wanted to mention, you mentioned about the clover with the yellow flowers. Just mentioned my wife the other day. We're having it something terrible this year where we haven't had it in the past. I don't know what it is, but I feel your frustration with that.
With your arborvitae, are they growing towards light? Is that what the circumstance is? They got shade on the backside of them?
No. That's not it. They're just, you know, sometimes they grow pyramid shape, and sometimes they grow kind of short and fat. And that's
right.
What mine are doing this year.
Yeah, some varieties are going to grow with a different shape than other ones. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mike.
Yep, my pleasure. And now let's go to Marilyn's. Hi, Marilyn.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering if you could tell me the difference between Bermuda grass and zoysia, or if there is a difference.
Well, there's totally different.
Okay.
The Bermuda grass is going to have more of a bluish-green cast to it. And it is, I mean, it does grow by runners, just like the zoysia does. But the zoysia grass is going to be darker green. It's going to be a lot thicker, let's say, wider blade than the Bermuda. Bermuda looks kind of willowy.
Okay, great. All right, thank you.
Yep, willowy just meaning thin. But the Bermuda is going to be probably a little bit more aggressive than what the zoysia is. And now let's see what's going on in John's yard. Hi, John.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Can you please tell me how to, I've got an Atlas cedar or a cedar Atlas. I'm not sure how you say it, but right in front of my house, faces south, and it's really starting to look ratty. I had to cut the top off of it a couple of years ago, and I did it at an angle per Hartke. And, you know, but it just looks like a terrible-looking shape. What can I trim that Atlas cedar?
You can, but it's not going to do any good. So they really don't like it here because of our weather and everything else. And once they start losing the aesthetic value, there's not really too much you can do.
Oh, in other words, I should not have cut the top off?
Yeah, I mean, you can, but it's just not going to do any good. It's not going to make a difference.
Okay, well, it was going through that little thing where it was losing its pine needles, and about a month ago I called you, and you said, yeah, it's supposed to be doing that this time of year anyway, and
yeah,
it filled
interior
in a little bit. Yeah. But
yeah,
it just looks like, I mean, I can't lose by trying to trim it as long, because you're telling me, I think you're wanting me to get it out of here.
No, you can keep pruning it until, let's say, the aesthetics are completely lost from your perspective. Then you might have to get a different one. But for the most part, they just don't like it here all that well.
Would you tell me a little tree that doesn't get too tall, like no more than maybe 8 or 9, 10 feet that I could replace that with someday and for this area?
How close is
south? Full south, south.
Full south, and how close are you planting it toward to your house?
Close. I would say only about a couple of feet out from my foundation.
Yeah, there's nothing that's really going to do well in that kind of situation, to be honest, from an evergreen standpoint.
Okay, so just a bush?
Yeah. Like a globe.
Okay.
It's just, it's just not a good spot for it, because the backside is always going to look naked because it's not going to be able to keep its needles. Or if you like, the growth that you've had up to this one that you have currently sounds like it's been in there for quite a while. You can just get another one once this one comes out and just have, several years of growth again until it finally starts aesthetically losing its value.
In other words, you want me to go Atlas Cedar again someday?
You can, yeah, you could go that again if you've had good success for multiple years.
Well, that's been in there, maybe 8 years.
Yeah, so, I mean, nothing else is going to do any better.
Yeah, okay. I just thought there was like an evergreen that would look good, and because my house would be bald without something right there that with some height.
Right.
So, okay. All right, well, yeah.
I mean, that close. Yeah, that close to the foundation, the soil is going to be really alkaline, so things like holly and some of the other, let's say, evergreens are just not going to do well in that situation. They're going to go downhill. But if you've got 8 years out of this and you've had to only start pruning it in the last couple of years, well, that's not horrible. It's just one of those.
My foundation is about 2 or 3 feet thick. It's that white, that's a Pennsylvania limestone foundation.
So that's extremely alkaline. You could actually have a soil test done to find out, what the pH is. Maybe you could try to compensate with that. But putting anything that close to your house is going to be detrimental to the aesthetic value. From the outside, looking towards your house, it's going to look fine. But on the backside, it's not going to look good. And then that's going to lead to the sort of the downhill decline.
Okay, so I need to go with some kind of plant that likes alkaline, likes a base.
Right, and there's not too many evergreens that are going to be able to do that.
Okay, can you give me real quick a plant that likes that kind of soil?
Basically, maybe get a trellis and try growing clematis on it, or a lilac can handle that kind of situation.
A lilac would be pretty. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
And we'll see you. Bye-bye.
314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, back to the phones, and we're headed to Gary's yard. Hi, Gary.
Good, Mike. Hey, I got a plant, Alex Clavius. I don't know if you recognize that, but what could I feed it to give it the best life?
Now, what was the plant's name?
Alex Glabius.
Alex Glabius. Is it an outdoor plant or indoor?
Outdoor.
Okay.
Inkberry. You would know it by inkberry.
Oh, inkberry. Okay. Yeah. So basically, it needs an acidic soil, so make sure that you get fertilizer for acid-loving plants, like miracid and that type thing.
Oh, okay. That sounds good. And it loves the sunshine, right?
Yeah, it does fine. Some of the hollies don't like to be in the full sun, but that particular one, and actually it's tough. It can take a wet soil. I mean, its cousins are natives to Missouri, to some of the swamp areas.
Well, I'll be darned. Well, they seem like they had trouble keeping them alive over there at the Fairfield condominium place over there off of 40. And it seemed like the cold weather kind of killed them.
Well, the cold weather was rough on a lot of the broadleaf evergreens, which this is one.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go to Donna's yard. Hi, Donna.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a new red bud I planted from a big box store. Part of it, I don't have any leaves on the stems, and a few stems do have fresh new leaves. I don't know. Somebody told me the tree looked half dead. Should I worry about the branches that don't have leaves on them?
I would say the branches that don't have any leaves, you might as well just go ahead and prune them off.
Okay. Is now a good time to just prune those off?
Yeah, anything that's dead, you know, and this is for any plant of any type, woody plant-wise. If there's no foliage there, then maybe take your hands and see if it's still flexible and it's not really brittle. But if it is brittle feeling, then you just cut it off.
Okay. And then I can shape it from there.
Right.
Is there a good time to prune them? Spring or fall, does it matter?
Basically, you know, you're growing the redbud tree for the spring flowering, and it is going to produce seed pods. For the first couple of years, I wouldn't just do any kind of pruning at all other than getting rid of the dead stuff until you can get the root system established.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
Yes, and now let's go to Nancy's yard. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, I have a couple questions about my vegetable garden. I have strawberries that are 3 years old. They produced strawberries this year, but not very big. What can I be doing now to get a better produce next year?
It may be the variety-wise as much as anything.
Okay.
So that's...
And should I cut the runners off?
No, let them go, because that's where you're going to get, you know, more production from as a result of it. So the runners are, you know, that's part of the whole thing. It's going to colonize and cover, you know, basically like a ground cover.
Okay. And what should I be doing for my asparagus this year? They're three-year-old male crowns. Should I be doing anything for them over the winter?
No, just... You can cut the stalks off if you haven't already cut them as we go into wintertime, but that's all you really need to do.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Yep. And now let's go to Carol's yard. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Mike. I have a number of boxwoods surrounding all around our deck, and, of course, they've browned through the winter. I think the severe weather you had mentioned is a problem.
Right.
What should I do with the browning part? Should I leave it and hope for the best? Or
no, if it's brown and the foliage is still brown on it and you haven't seen any new green growth coming, I had to do some of that with some of my boxwood. I just ended up cutting, you know, all the brown stems out completely.
Okay, and then will those kind of refurbish from that point on next year, or will that always... be like that?
You're probably always going to have more or less a naked spot in that, you know, area, because deep down inside there, because you're going to be cutting these, let's say, damaged twigs and branches off, there's none of the buds in there are going to be functional.
Right. The survival chances, you think they'll survive through another season?
They should, unless we have another screwy winter like we did this past year. With that cold snap, you know, in the fall, which caught them all by surprise, all the broadleaf evergreens.
Right, because I've never had that happen before.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's what I can do, and hope for the best, too.
Right, that's exactly right.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Sure, let's go to Naomi's. Hi, Naomi.
Hello.
Hi.
I have an invasion of moles. I have like almost an acre. They just keep taking over and growing, and I've put poison peanuts down, but there's so many I can't take care of all of them. Is there companies that come and take care of those?
Yeah, I mean, they'll put out traps.
Oh, well, that would take forever. I mean, so, my daughter started doing that, and I thought, oh, my gosh, that would take forever. That's all they'll do is put traps down.
Pretty much. I mean, there is some products. One is called Kaput, K-A-P-U-T, which is a gel-type thing, but you have to inject it into the, you know, the surface tunnels. And as a mole comes along looking for earthworms to eat, it'll smell this kaput, and it smells like earthworms, and it's poisonous. But if you have a huge yard full of moles, what that means is you have a lot of earthworms, so consequently there's a lot for them to eat.
Well, I don't know. They came from an adjacent yard, and I thought, well, they're not bothering me there. But they came down the hill and right through my yard, under my driveway, and I don't know. There must be a zillion babies under there. So I don't know. It's driving me crazy.
Yeah, okay. There's not. I mean, professional services generally they're going to use the traps, Victor Spear or Choke or Loop.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure, Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I will be back next week. And the sunlight hurts my eyes.